Good morning, Rabbotai. Chodesh Tov. We read yesterday in Parshat Acharei Mot that we are commanded Ushvartem et chukotai et mishpatai ta'asu Hashem ya'aseh ha'adam v'chai bohem ani Hashem. Mitzvot, chukim in mishpatim are designed That's the famous drash of the Gemara quoted in many occasions. That all of the mitzvot of the Torah are designed to promote life and not to be responsible for somebody's death. And as a result, generally speaking, if one is coerced to violate an avera, the alternative being to give up one's life, generally speaking, it's ya'avar v'al yeharei. Transgress and do not allow yourself to be killed. Except for the famous cases for which the halakha is yehorei ka'al ya'avor. But I'd like to interpret that phrase v'chai behem v'lo shiyamut behem al pidrush, not necessarily in terms of promoting our life versus necessarily having our life taken away from us, as unfortunately has occurred so frequently in our history, but rather mitzvot are designed to promote a sense of chiyut, a sense of life, a sense of invigorated understanding of one's relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They are designed to necessarily promote growth and understanding as to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. V'lo she'yamut, mitzvot chukim mishpatim, should not be viewed as stifling our growth, as being something terribly negative, something that we would like to avoid at all costs. So as I mentioned yesterday, and Rabbi Moshe Bernstein is smiling today as he did yesterday, I think the greatest contribution that our speaker this morning has made is the attempt, and successful attempt, in trying to bring Yahadut to an audience in Medinat Yisrael that has perceived Torah and Mitzvot as being stifling, as being responsible for their spiritual death, not interested whatsoever, and he has had the ability to somehow connect. And my brother is a Rav, as you well know, in Yerushalayim, and Katamon tells me some of the horror stories that takes place with the Rabbanut and people who are not yet committed to Torah and Mitzvot. The first interaction with them is at a wedding or Rachmanu Litzlan Levaya, and it is such a negative experience. And that is something that our guest this morning has worked diligently to try to overcome. He is the Rav of Shoham. When you go to the airport, there's always a sign, Shoham, take this exit. And the founder, one of the founders of Rabbanei Tzohar, whose purpose and goal and mission is, as I said, to bring and make Yahadut far more palatable to the broader segment of Am Yisrael. Gives me great pleasure to introduce a Rav Stein.
Good morning to everyone. The truth is that I guess that when you hear the news from Israel in the last 24 hours, I guess our attention is to other issues than what the rabbi was talking, what I'm supposed to talk about. But I want to share with you an anecdote that occurred to me, I think, when the second intifada broke out. I was invited to one of the settlements in Shomron, and I was asked to deal with the chinuch questions. And it was right after one of the events. I don't remember, a few settlers were killed, and it was 24 hours afterwards, and I'm coming to this place, and the hall is full with 100, 120 people. And I said to them, well, we are under attack. We are under terror attacks, and yet what really matters to these people here that are in this settlement is to come and to hear a shiur about chinuch, which means that our strength is built not only to by dealing with the issues that are burning in front of us now, but issues that we believe that really matter for the future of our families, for the future of our kids, for the future of our state. And I think that when we deal today with the security problems, challenges in the South, we know that one way or another, Bezrat Hashem, it will be solved, although it cost us a huge price. But yet, we know that this is relatively easy to be solved versus the challenge that I'm going to deal with, that maybe one of the problems is that the lack of awareness of the existence of this problem, of this challenge. And I would like to share with you an anecdote. A few years ago, I live in Shoham, as the rabbi has mentioned. The city of Shoham has 25,000 people nearby the airport, relatively new city. 80% of the residents are secular, 20% are observant, Dati Lumi. And I happen to live in a neighborhood that I'm surrounded by non-observant families. A few years ago, my wife says to me, maybe we invite our neighbors for the night before Pesach to see how Bdikat Chametz looks like. And we invited them, and they were very happy to come. You know, I asked my kids to distribute 10 crumbs of bread all over the place. And I came after Mariv, and we started to look. I lighted the candle and the light, and we started to look after the 10 pieces of bread. As it happens from time to time, something has to work wrong. And one piece of bread was missing. And the kids started to accuse each other, to tease each other, what's going on here, where did you put it, you've done it purposely. By the way, this piece of bread hasn't been found till now. and I got nervous as well. And the neighbors, all this is done in front of our neighbors. And my neighbor says to me, Rav David, usually I know you as a relaxed person, could you tell me what's going on here? Why is everybody so mad and so nervous? So I tried to explain, look, we put 10 pieces of bread. One piece of bread is missing. So he says to me, what's the problem? I have plenty of bread in my refrigerator. I mean, I can bring you as much bread as you need. Now, to live next door to the rabbi, living in the state of Israel, in the Jewish state, and not knowing nothing, but nothing, about what is Pesach is about, and what does it mean that we are looking, we are searching after the Chametz, and that at least in the rabbi's house, we should know that there shouldn't be found any piece of bread. As one of the very famous secular authors said once, we wanted to raise apikosim, but what came out was ignorance, amaratzim. And the question is, how did we arrive to a point in which, in the state of Israel, when you meet Israelis, general average Israeli, secular, he has no clue about what Sidur is about, what Birkat HaMazon is about, what is Shema Yisrael, and I could give you numbers and statistics that will approve what I'm saying now, but I don't need it. I see it on a daily basis. As a matter of fact, there is a new word in Israel, which is called, I would say it in Hebrew, because the literal translation is quite difficult, because even in Hebrew, nobody understands what really it means. The noun is hadata. But what is the verb of the word hadata? Nobody knows. Lehadatot somebody. Hadatah means religization or proselytization, to proselytize. I mean, when I come to a high school today and I want to say that Jews are used to pray to daven 3 times a day, it's something that is forbidden to say. Because, what do you mean, Jews are used to daven 3 times a day? My father doesn't daven, so you try to religize me. You try to make me frum. No, I don't try to make you frum. I'm just telling you that until 200 years ago, all Jews all over the world, that's what they used to do. There is a Knesset member, Ruth Calderon, former Knesset member. You know, there is a custom in our Knesset that when a Knesset member is elected, his first speech in the Knesset he could give for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and nobody is allowed to interrupt him. That's the first and the last time that he get that privilege. And the next speech will be quite often interrupted. So this woman came, this secular woman, I must emphasize, she came with a piece of paper like this, but she had 120 copies, and she distributed all these copies to all the Knesset members. And when they opened the paper, they realized that she actually photographed a blood gemara from Masechet Ketubot. And she started to teach a story that is brought up in this gemara. And the story is about Rav Rechumi. There was a rabbi named Rav Rechumi. And this Rav Rechumi, and she started to teach his story. Rav Rechumi used to go to yeshiva and to come back home once a year. Usually he arrived back home from the yeshiva on Erev Yom Kippur. He doesn't say when he went back to the yeshiva, whether it was after Sukkot or after Hanukkah, he doesn't mention that. But he used to come back home on Erev Yom Kippur. And the Gemara describes how he was learning on Erev Yom Kippur in the yeshiva. And he was so deep inside the Gemara, he forgot his family, he forgot his wife, forgot to come back. And his wife, and the Gemara describes how his wife was waiting for him. And was saying, now he's coming, now he's coming, now he's coming. Actually, she started to cry because she was missing her husband for months that he hasn't arrived, he hasn't showed up. And the Gemara describes how at one point, the roof where he sat and learned, the roof fell upon him and he died. And Ruth Calderon is teaching this story, and nobody's allowed to interrupt her. But you know, a teacher, when you teach, you want the involvement of the students. So she asks a question, and the Knesset members started to respond. And there was a whole Gemara study inside the Knesset. By the way, you can watch it on YouTube. It had more than 1 million people that watched it. I think it's the most popular speech that was ever given in the Knesset. And then towards the end of a speech, she asked, I guess you wonder, why did I want to open my career in Knesset with this speech, with this topic? And I wanted to tell you that I want to blame somebody. Because the first time I discovered this story was years after the high school, years after the university. How come none of the Israeli students in the high schools have never been exposed to the huge treasure that we have in the Torah Sheba'al Peh that was given to us and was learned by thousands and millions of Jews throughout the Jewish history? And none of us was never exposed to that. How come 70 years of the Israeli state, no student in Israel, in the high school, if you come and tell him, did you ever hear about Bereshit Rabbah? He will tell you, what is that? Bereshit, maybe he could recall somewhere in his deep memory that he learned it once. Bereshit Rabbah, what is it? Gemara? What are you talking about? How did we arrive to that situation? I would try, since I was asked to give a paper of Mekorot, I have to teach a class now. So I will share with you just a few sources, and afterwards, the time that is will be left, I will deal with the challenge that we have to deal with today. The question, or the halachic approach to people that do not observe mitzvot, is quite, and I say it in understatement, is completely unacceptable in our generation. I'll just try to give you two or three short examples that are brought in the Gemara, and I would say that these sources in the Gemara, without knowing that the Gemara exists, are terrifying the Israeli society. I would start with the first one, the Gemara in Masechet Ketubot. The Gemara asks, what happens? There is a debate between two rabbis about the what is the meaning or what is the level of commitment if somebody took a loan from a friend, he has to bring him back the money. Why does he have to bring him back the money? Is it a mitzvah? You know, I have a mitzvah to put on phone, so I have a mitzvah to bring back the money that I lent from somebody. Or it's more than that. It's a shiabud that is on my property, and actually it's not depending on my goodwill, because this money belongs to him, whether I want to bring it to him, whether I don't want to give it to him. So the Gemara asks, according to that rabbi that says that it's only a mitzvah, ledidach amar lerav kahana lerav papa, ledidach beamart priat baal chov mitzvah. According to your insight, that you believe that it's only a mitzvah, amar lo nicha li deyavid mitzvah. I don't want to observe mitzvah. You are my supervisor. I mean, you are the emissary of the Rebbeinu Shalom to force me to do mitzvah. I don't want to bring back the money, to give you back the money. Oh, so he says the answer is very simple. Amar li tnina, b'me dvarim amurim, that if you are violating a prohibition, you get 39 malkot, b'mitzvot lo ta'aseh. אבל במצוות עשה, כגון שאומרים לו, עשה סוכה ואינו עושה, לולה ואינו עושה, מקים אותו עד שתצא נפשו. So, if you don't want to give me back the money, no problem, I will beat you until one of the two options. Either you give me back the money, or you'll be dead. And your kids will have to bring you to give me back the money. Or, if not the kids, at least you'll be dead. For not observing mitzvah sukkah, let me just translate it to our daily life. Suppose it happens only in my house, my family, but maybe somebody could find himself in this situation. My son doesn't want to get up on Shabbos morning to daven in the, not in the Ashkome minyan, in the regular minyan that by us starts at 8:30. He wants to go to the Chabad minyan that begins at somewhere 9:30. I come over to him and I say to him, look, my son, my dear son, you know that Zman Kriyat Shema, the latest, is 9:10. So if you get up to the Chabad minyan, you will not be in time for the mitzvah aseh of Kriyat Shema. According to this Gemara, what I should do is wake him up and tell him, look, you have two options, my dear son. One, to get up and to say Krishna. I don't even want to mention the second option. But otherwise, you'll be dead. I mean, that's what is written here. There is no other way to translate. There is a debate between the Ktzos and the Netivos, one of the two of the biggest rabbis in the 18th century. The debate, who is authorized to do that? Is every Jew allowed to do that? So I can come over to you and to see, well, you don't put on the tefillin in the right place, please fix it. I don't want to. Fix it? No, I don't want to. So then I'm allowed to kill you. So the Netivot understands that each individual is entitled to do that, and the Ktzot disagrees with him and says, no, not every individual is entitled to do that, only the Beis Din. But to our topic, it's not important, because what's the difference if the Beis Din is entitled to do that or individual? That was written here in this Gemara. There is a second Gemara. Second Gemara is in Gemara Baba Kama, source number 3. Source number 3 speaks about, I will make the long story short, there is a big debate between the rabbis whether a person could do a din for himself. He doesn't want to call the police, he doesn't want to go to the Beis Din, he wants to handle the situation by himself. For instance, I see somebody that is trying to steal from me. Do I have to wait until the police will come, or can I push him from my property and make sure he doesn't steal, he doesn't rob me, without waiting for the police or for the Beis Din? So the Gemara says, brings the following situation. So there is a debate among the rabbis. What are the circumstances that a person is allowed to use his own power without calling to the authorities? The Gemara talks about a situation that there was an Eved Ivri, a Jewish slave, that was already for 50 years, because he said he wanted to stay with a Canaanite maid that his owner gave him. And he arrived to the 50 years, and he has to go out, and he refuses. He says, I want to stay here. I love my work, and I want to stay. I don't want to go home. So the Gemara says that if he hit him, the owner, and he was injured, he's potter. So the Gemara wants to conclude from this that it is permitted to a person to do, to judge by himself, even though he's not losing money. I mean, what do you care if this slave will stay? And then the Gemara says, give a look at the bottom line of source number 3. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar, we are talking about Eved Shemasar lo Rabo Shifcha Knaanit. He was married to a Knaanite slave. Adayidna Etera. Ve'ashta Isura. Until now, he was permitted, he was allowed to be with this non-Jewish woman. But from now on, it's a prohibition. So if it's prohibition, what does it mean? So am I allowed to beat him because he's violating the Isur of Canaanite maid? The answer is yes. And all the rabbis agree. So now let me just translate this to our current situation in the state of Israel, and I guess here as well. I told you about my neighbors. These neighbors that happen to be wonderful neighbors. Whenever I come back with my wife from shul, home, it's about 11 o'clock in the morning, our neighbors go out from the house and go to the car to visit friends, to go to a trip, to go to the beach, wherever they go. Whenever we arrive to that point that our eyes meet, I ask my wife a second before that, what will we say to them today? We have a lot of options. One, to ignore, to pretend we didn't see them. Number two, to say Shabbat Shalom. Number three, to say have a nice day. My wife said, why wouldn't we say to them, Tehnu, enjoy yourself today? What is the terminology that we should use to be polite and to remain friendly, but we remember that it's Shabbat? Well, according to this Gemara, there is only one option that is given to us. The only thing we have to do is one of the two options. Either to throw stones on them, either to put nails in front of the wheels so that there will be a flat tire and they will not be able to continue to drive. Because if I'm commanded to prevent this slave from living with this non-Jewish woman, it doesn't apply only to a non-Jewish woman, it applies to every Jew that I see that is violating any mitzvah that is prohibited to do. I am commanded by Hashem, by the Torah, to prevent him from doing that. Now, it's I guess most of us, when they see these sources and they try to translate it to practical life, find it quite terrifying. I mean, and when I come to religious boys and girls in Israel and I ask them, why don't you do that today? Why don't we do it? Is it because we are afraid to do that? Actually, that's what we should do. Or today is different. Why? The answer is not that clear. And if the answer is not that clear, I could understand why people, why secular people are afraid of us. Because they may think, and I'm not 100% sure that they are wrong, that the only reason why we do not do that is just because we don't have the power to do that. But had we had the power to do that, maybe we would have done it. Give a look at the story that is brought up in source number 2. There was a debate between the rabbis whether it's permitted to eat odor. Besura lo achle kachle. They didn't eat odor. Bepumpadita, they did eat this odor. Rami bar Tamre, kachal, atinim shel para. The atinim. Now everybody understands?
Otter.
Otter. Everybody now understands? In Hebrew, so that everybody will improve his Hebrew, atinim. Atinim. That's where we milk the cow. The kids, so there was a debate whether you are allowed to eat this piece of meat or not. Rabbi Bar Tamre, this guy, this rabbi, arrives to Surah, Erev Yom Kippur. Ikla l'surah b'ma l'yom ad Kippur. He arrives to Surah, Erev Yom Kippur. Afkinu kule alma l'kachlinu. Now, you know that Erev Yom Kippur is one of the days where everybody is supposed to eat meat. So they slaughtered a lot of cows, but everybody threw this piece of meat, this otter, he threw it to the garbage because Rav didn't allow to eat from this otter. But this rabbi came from a different place where they were allowed to eat, and he didn't have what to eat. So I guess what he was doing was to go from one garbage can to another one and to collect otters, and that's exactly what he ate. Now give a look at that story. The third line. Aitua lekamei de Rav Chisda. Who brought him to Rav Chisda? There was a police guard that was checking every Jew. What was he doing? Was he eating the right piece of meat or not? And they found out that this rabbi dared to eat from this piece of meat. So they brought him to the Beis Din. Erev Yom Kippur. They didn't have any other things to do at this Erev Yom Kippur but to look after this Jew that was eating this piece of meat. So he asks him, why did you do that? Amaita vidachi? And he responded, Me'atra de Rav Yehuda. Now what do you want from me? I come from the place of Rav Yehuda and he allowed to eat the odor. So he said to him, So what? You are living here now, you came to this place, in this place you have to obey to the rules of this place. So he said to him, well, I didn't eat it here. I was eating it chutz letchum achaltinu. I was eating it outside the territories of the surah. Which means that the police guards that were supervising, they arrived even behind the borders of Surah, and now they keep on asking him, how did you fry it? Did you use, he said, I used seeds of grapes. So they asked him, so maybe it was a goyish grapes and therefore they were prohibited because they were yainese. So he answers, no, it's already above 12 months, they were very dry. And then he asks, so maybe they were stolen. How do you know that he didn't? No, they were not. They were hefker. And then he says, give a look. Chazya de lo ava manach tefillin. He realized that he was not putting on film. So he asked him, where is your film? I mean, why do you care where is my film? Amar le, well, I'm sick in my stomach, I have a problem, so I'm potter from tefillin. And then he realized that he doesn't wear tzitzis. Where's your tzitzis? I must share with you an experience that I guess every Israeli boy that grew up in the religious education could tell you, that's one of the moments that he asked himself whether he wants to remain religious or not. And that's the point where a teenager that is 14 or 15 years old comes to school and the rabbi gives him a hug and he thinks that he wants to greet him and to say hello, but actually what he wants to do is to check whether he wears a tzitzis or he doesn't wear a tzitzis. That's the story that is described here. Why don't you wear a tzitzis? Now, do we want to live in such a society that will look like this story? And that's the question. The secular people believe that this is what we intend to do in the state of Israel. As a matter of fact, we've done that. We've done that with the laws of Shabbat. We've done this with the laws of marriage and divorce and other places where we control the Jewish life of the Israeli society. And I can give you tens of stories, but I have 20 minutes, so I want to conclude this year. I will make the long story short. If you live in a society where the state tells you with whom you are allowed to get married and with whom you are not allowed to get married, because we will recognize only if you get married through one track and we don't allow you to get married through a different track, and will not recognize a marriage that is not done under one religious authority, this means that actually you try to control his life. And that's what they feel, especially when you're talking about people that, you know, they meet. We have 1.4 million immigrants that arrived from former Soviet Union, and these people have to prove their Jewishness, and it's not that easy. But forget proving the Jewishness. Many of them are not Jewish, at least 25%, 30%. Nobody really knows the exact numbers. But they go to the army, they go to universities, our kids date with them, and once they arrive to the point of marriage, they are told by the state that, no, you cannot marry here, because we don't know if he's Jewish, if she's Jewish. What do you mean cannot marry? That's one of the most fundamental rights of human beings, of citizens, to get married. Now you tell me that I'm not allowed to use a bus, etc., etc. Now, I'm not saying that the government is wrong. Don't misunderstand me. I'm just describing what is the feeling of the secular society. Now, I want you to understand that once somebody feels that he's coerced, somebody feels that somebody else wants to control his life, and this one happened to be religious, and this one happened to be maybe strongly religious, and maybe he himself, in certain cases, doesn't go to the army himself, but he tells me what to do. This, by itself, pushes away and turns off millions of Israelis that say, we don't want to have anything with these people. As a matter of fact, you know about Pew Report that was done about America, America Jewry. Let me tell you, the Pew Report that was done in Israel, the same Pew, but the question was the following. What are you afraid more? That your son, your daughter, will get married with a Gentile, or will get married to a Haredi, or will get married to a Dati, or will get married whatever? I guess you know what stands. What's terrifying the secular society more than any other threat? The son will get married to a Haredi woman, or the daughter will get married to a Haredi boy. That's what terrifies them the most. The goy, the Gentile, is very low in the list. That's the challenge. Now, since I have to give a shiur, and I'm not talking about what Tzohar is doing, although the rabbi has mentioned that, but I want to turn to the second side of the paper, of the page, and I want to talk 5 minutes about a mitzvah that we are not doing today. The Rambam says the following in source number 7. Mitzvat aseh le'abed avodat kochavim u'meshamshea. Whenever we see avodah zarah, an idol, we are supposed to destroy it. Not only to destroy if we see it, as the Rambam says in the second line, uve'eretz Yisrael mitzvah lirdof acharea ad she'ne'abed ota mikol arzeinu. In Chutz La'aretz, we don't have to chase after it. We don't have to look after it. In Eretz Yisrael, we have to look after it. Okay. I guess everybody understands that today, it's almost impossible. Not almost. It's impossible to do that. But I will share with you what my father's tradition was. I guess my father, bless his memory, came from Poland. And he used to tell me that in Poland, when they saw the idols of the church, of the different churches, they used to look to the right, to the left, and to see that nobody is there, and to spit, and to say, "Shaketz te shaktsenu, v'taev te ta'avenu, ki cherem hu." To quote the verse in Sefer Dvarim. And I said to him, you know, my dear father, there was a big scholar, you know, our rabbis did not say to spit and did not say to use this verse, but instead of doing that, they used to do something else. Give a look at source number 8. Tanu Rabbanan, Haroe Markulis, Omer, Baruch Shenatan, Erech Apayim Leavrei Retzono. What is this Markulis? Markulis was one of the most corrupted idols that ever existed in human beings' history. The way to worship this idol was that people used to throw stones on this idol, and that was the way of worshiping. So what is so bad with throwing stones? You know, in Hebrew there is an expression, I don't want to complete the expression because usually it ends up with a very ugly words, but when you want to say that somebody does not respect, he say, does not respect the rules, does not respect the Torah or whatever, he will say, "Ani zorek alecha." Zorek means I don't care about what you say. I don't care at all about you. Actually, when you throw stones, I say I don't care about nothing. As a matter of fact, the Gemara tells us a story. There was a Jew that was walking by near this idol of the Markulis. The Gemara says that the Jew asked the priest, "How do you worship this idol?" And he said to him, "Well, you have to throw stones." So he went to do his exterminations, and he took one of the stones, he cleaned himself, and he threw the stone full with this, with the result of his toilets. He took the stone and threw on this idol, smeared with all the stuff there. And the priest said to him, "Wow, there was never in our history nobody that worshipped this idol in such a wonderful way as this Jew." Which means that when Jews worship something, they do it perfect. But what does it mean to throw this stone on this idol in such a way? It means that you really disgrace every value. There is no value that really is meaningful, that you respect. Now, when we see this Markulis, that the Roman Empire at that time was worshipping for, or at least a part of them were worshipping this idol. So I understand that we cannot destroy it because Nebuchadnezzar will live under the Roman Empire and we cannot do nothing to this idol. Cry, say a verse, express your hope that God will destroy this if you cannot do it yourself. Spit like the Jews in Poland. No, all this is not written in the Gemara. The Gemara says, well, you make a bracha. Instead of destroying this idol, you make a bracha. What a bracha? Baruch ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. Don't misunderstand the Gemara. It's a bracha b'shem u'malchut. Baruch ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, Shenatan Ela Shoshech hapayim leovrei retzono, which means you are so patient to those who violate your will, your wishes, your vision. You are so patient. And I want to bless you, Hashem, for your patience. So, and the Rambam paskens this. Source number 9. Haroe makom shovdim bo avodah zara. Not only Marcolis. Says, so that nobody will be misunderstanding. Baruch ata Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam. Shenatan erech hapayim lovoyezim. There is no other rabbi that disagrees with it. Everybody agrees. So the question is, and Rav Kook raises this question, what's going on here? It's that Rambam that wrote in source number 7 that we have to chase after them. And it's the same Rambam that says, no, if you see this Avodah Zorah, make a bracha. Asher natan erech hapayim lo borei ratzono. And Rav Kook explains the following. There are times in human beings' history where there is no way to deal with people through talking to them, through convincing them, and there is only one way to deal with them, is to destroy. And there are generations that the only way you should deal with these challenges is through dialogue, through inspiration, through explanation. How do I know to which generation I belong? How do I know if Hashem wants me to destroy idols now, or He wants me to make this bracha, to wait, or to inspire them, and not to destroy it and using violence? How do I know? Rav Kook says, very simple. If you see that you live in an era that it's impossible to force somebody to destroy it, and you have to understand that it's not a mistake of the way God leads the world, conducts the world. It was done in purpose. If we live today, and that's what Rav Kook says, if we live today, and he wrote it 100 years ago, if we live in a period of time in Jewish history and in human beings' history, that the freedom of thought, the freedom of behavior, the freedom of religion is a part of our society, it means that the way that we should treat those who are violating the will of Hashem should be not through power, not through hitting them, beating them, but through other tools. As a matter of fact, I want to share with you a story. You can watch it in the YouTube as well. Rav Steinman. Everybody heard about Rav Steinman, one of the most important Haredi leaders in Eretz Israel. A year and a half ago. It was recorded a few months before he passed away. It was recorded half an hour questions in Chinuch. So one of the questions, it's worth to watch it. I'm promising you, you'll enjoy every minute. Every question, every answer gives a real delight to see how a big Talmid Chacham and a mensch, how he answers to the questions. One of the questions was that the father asked the Rav Steinman, my son doesn't want to get up to Krishna in the morning to go to daven. What should I do with him? So he says, wake him up once, and if he doesn't want to get up, leave him alone. And he says, don't nudge him. Al tened nedlo. He says it in Hebrew. Dreim nishtem kop. That's what he says. He says it in Yiddish. And the question is, didn't Rav Steinman know the Gemara? Makim oto ad shetetze nafsho? Of course he was aware of this Gemara. But very simple. Rav Steinman understood exactly what Rav Kook was saying. Although he didn't know, I guess, he didn't learn Rav Kook. There are generations that we know that the way we deal with people should be by inspiring them and not by coercing them. And the main reason why we arrived to the situation today that so many secular people don't want to hear anything from us is because they feel that we want to coerce them. I will say a bit about what Tzohar was trying to do and is doing in this area. I'll just refer to one project of Yom Kippur. I don't know if you know, most Israelis fast, according to all surveys, Most Israelis fast on Yom Kippur. But most Israelis do not go to shul on Yom Kippur. It's much easier to go to shul than to fast. Yet, most Israelis do not go to shul. I'm talking especially about the secular Ashkenazi society. And when we try to analyze why they don't come to shul, we found out that there were three major reasons. The first reason is because they don't know how to daven. And to find yourself in the machzor, it's not easy for a regular person that is used to come to daven, for somebody that never opened a siddur, to find the places in the machzor, it's almost a mission impossible. Second reason is, to be honest, and I say it with a lot of pain, we are not embracing them. We are not encouraging them to come to us. Most of our shuls are packed in Yom Kippur. We don't need any additional visitors, especially that if they don't pay the membership for the community. We don't need them. We are packed without. As a matter of fact, many of us, I will tell you, we have one of the projects, this Bar Mitzvah project. I could tell you that I have to struggle with shuls to accept secular Bar Mitzvahs. These complain why they come with a camera, and otherwise complain that the women don't come without being dressed in the proper way, and those complain why they come with the car, and those the davening is a bit late, and is ending a bit later. I have to struggle with shuls to accept secular Bar Mitzvah, and that's without talking about special needs Bar Mitzvah. That in the Ministry of Education in the State of Israel, in the formal papers is written, if you have a special need kid, send him to the Reform and the Conservative because they will receive him, unlike the Orthodox. And that's a real Chilul Hashem. I mean, it's something that we cannot be accepted. So when they feel that they are not welcome, nobody wants to come and to feel that he's not accepted well and is not embraced there. But the third reason, which is most probably the most important reason, is the reason of I don't want to be identified, to be associated with the establishment. I don't want to go to the shul, because the shul represents the coercion. The shul represents whatever I like to hate during the year. I don't want to come Yom Kippur there. I'm ready to fast. I'm proud to be Jewish, but I don't want to be there. So we said to ourselves, if Muhammad doesn't come to the mountain will come to Muhammad. And we started to go after them. Today we have already every Yom Kippur and Purim, and more than 500 locations in which we invite secular people to daven with us in a neutral place. That's the way it's defined. A neutral place. No coercion. You daven what you want, you daven as you want, and you're free to leave, you're free to come. Don't feel stranger. That's your place. It's not ours. It belongs to you as it belongs to us. That's our challenge. Our challenge is to create an environment in which the secular society will feel the Torah, Judaism, could resonate to him, could inspire him in a way that he will not have the feeling that we tell him what to do. We expose him to what Judaism is about. But we don't tell him, do this, and you're not good if you're doing that or doing that. That's the challenge. If we want, and it's one of the most crucial issues in the future of the Jewish state of Israel, the more we will coerce, the less they will be Jewish. And I will give you an example from a year ago. The government, because of pressures of the Haredi parties, has accepted a bill of closing the supermarkets. Supermarkets are not allowed to open anymore on Shabbat. 50 municipalities, once this law was accepted, 50 municipalities decided to open the supermarkets on Shabbat. I will share with you the story of Shoham. Shoham, as I told you before, 80% are secular. And when I say secular, not Likud voters, left-wing voters. And no store is open on Shabbat. 100% of the stores are kosher. No store is open on Shabbat. So the mayor, once this law was accepted, the mayor gathered the assembly of the municipality and asked them to receive a decision that to take a decision that the stores will be able to be open on Shabbat. And the religious members of the municipality came over to me and asked me what should they do. So I said to them, please go. There was a program in Yam HaMelech, in the Dead Sea. Please go for vacation in the next week. If you want me, I will pay this vacation. I don't want you to be there. Let them deal this issue by themselves without any involvement. Not you, not me. I don't want to hear from you saying anything about this initiative to open the supermarkets on Shabbat. So they went for vacation in Yam HaMelech. The assembly gathered and nothing was accepted. The stores are still closed. I know for sure, as a fact, had the religious members raised their voice against opening the stores, the final decision would have been, we open the stores. Because we are a minority. But if we leave it to them, not every secular people wants to open stores on Shabbat. Maybe many of them want to relax on Shabbat. Many of them don't want the noise on Shabbat. Not only because of religious reasons. But once somebody feels that we try to push him, the normal, reasonable Jewish response to that is to push back. And once you push back, it's all usually in the negative way. That's our challenge, to be smart and to understand that in order to expose people to the beauty of our treasure, of the Jewish treasures, the challenge is to expose them without being judgmental, without being arrogant to them, and without any attempt to control their lives. Shalom, Boker Tov. Thank you.